daughter of her mother's little helper, and to help her on her way, get her through her busy day. Doctor, please, some more of these outside the door. Don't appreciate that you get tired. They're so hard to satisfy. You can tranquilize your man. So go running for a shelter of a mother's little helper. And for help you through the night, help to minimize your flight. Doctor, please, some more of
Charlie Parker. What do you think? Can I get a yay from you there, Steve?
Yeah, you can.
All right, fantastic. Got Steve in here. He was here, I don't know, a month or 6 weeks ago. And just a cat that had incredible stories about seeing, like, Bowie in from the Spiders from Mars before they were the Spiders from Mars, or one of their first gigs. Yeah, was this true?
Right.
This was not
true,
hyperbole, no?
No, no. I grew up in a small town about 40 miles north of London.
All right, we're going to go back to that, so we don't need to get into the
you
background.
Don't need the story.
We know you're
get to the meat of it.
Yeah, we've got okay, we know then. Your history though, but you're yeah. But you've seen, and then so you were lucky enough to be around when David Bowie was, and then that whole music scene. What year would this have been?
71.
Okay.
And he didn't have a band at that time.
And you said you had a little club in your kind of hamlet that...
It was a small town surrounded by villages, and a local promoter would put on clubs, events. The club was called Friars, and as in sort of Benedictine monks. And it's still actually going, but I started going when I was about 15, and at that time, Bowie was going to perform, and I was a young teenager, I thought of him as a one-hit wonder.
And that hit would have been...
Space Odyssey.
All right.
And I was thinking, well, I'll just go. I went by myself, and...
As a 15-year-old, with your, like, hard and fast opinions that you formed at such an age...
I had. There was a lot to take in as a teenager.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's an age where you develop an opinion, you know, pretty, or at least be able to more express it than you were when you were just a chap, you know.
Definitely, yeah. Anyway, I went. He performed. He showed up. He had long shoulder length hair. He wore sort of these pants that were very flared, so it looked like he was wearing a skirt. He's not overly confident at the start of the gig, and he was playing songs from Hunky Dory, which had been released.
Oh, shit.
And it began as a solo performance, and then he brought out other musicians, including Mick Ronson and I think Trevor Boulder. And possibly Woody Woodmansey as well. And then, of course, they were the
That's
people
the
who
band,
became
yeah.
The Spiders. And apparently after that gig, he was backstage, and it had been a great success. And he said, oh, this is it. I'm going to use this band, and I'm going to come, you know, do something.
Man, so you were there to witness the gig that launched that band, and
that's right. And then this was in the September of 71. He then came back. About three or four months later, in January 1972, and I nearly didn't go. It was like a wintry night, cold January, and I thought, well, he was here a few months ago. I'll go anyway because there was never anything much on in my town apart from Friars and pubs. So I went along. And this gig was completely different. In that four-month period, he'd written a lot of the songs for Ziggy Stardust, and he hadn't yet performed.
What about, like, Man Who Sold the World, though? He had those songs.
Yeah.
Weren't those songs, like, charting at all? Like,
no.
Before?
He performed those at the first concert I just mentioned, alongside ones from Hunky Dory.
So Man Who Sold the World, or what's the other, like, Black Country Rock?
Those songs, yeah.
But they didn't release singles of those at all, or...?
Oh, they never went anywhere.
Okay.
They never went anywhere.
Man, that would be nice to have those records if they were, like, if they did do singles.
Yeah, so that was the second gig was when he came back, and instead of what they usually began gigs at that time with people sitting on the floor, and there was a low stage, wooden floorboards, and Bowie came out in darkness and made his own introduction, and I do remember it. He said, "My name is David Bowie. These are the Spiders from Mars, and this is some of our music." And then the lights went up, and so they're all in there.
Man, I'm getting like goosebumps
just listening
to that. Yeah,
they're fresh from Mars. They look fantastic. The long hair is gone. He's
got short,
cropped red hair.
So that was it.
That was his first gig as Ziggy Stardust.
No shit.
Yeah, he'd never performed as Ziggy before.
Damn! All right. Any Evidence of that at all, like tapes or video, anything?
There's bits and pieces of video. There's actually an audio only YouTube version. Sorry, soundtrack from the first gig. I don't know if there is one from the first Ziggy Stardust.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was, I was like 15, so I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And
so did you go out and buy his record then? Or
it wasn't out. It wasn't out. So all the music was new to everybody there who heard it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was great. You know, when you're that age, it feels like you've got ownership of this experience.
Sure.
And you went to school on the Monday, and it's like, were you at Friars? Did you go? Did you go?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see him? These were it was exciting, you know.
I sat home. My mum wouldn't let me out. Yeah, that's awesome. That's and good. So you came in here, but though you were going to augment that with something about something else. Was that true, or is that it?
What was that?
About the club, different.
Oh well, yeah, I can tell you a little bit more about that. Yeah, the club has existed now for since 1969 in three or four different venues, all in the town of Aylesbury, and he would book date. I'm talking about a guy called Dave Stops, and you should check him out. He should be knighted. He's a wonderful promoter.
Yeah, and he would bring the acts out into the.
That's right.
I don't want to say hinterlands in a disparaging way, but
But that's what it was. All the people would come in from the villages, and they would always be a good audience,
right?
And wanted to hear.
Grateful that someone was like schlep their all shit out there.
Yeah, it was wonderful. We were very spoiled. I've been looking recently at the gigs that I saw there. Roxy Music.
This was the Brian Eno days, right?
The Brian Eno days. Genesis came there a lot. There were bands that were considered sort of Friars' favourites. Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel.
How were Genesis? Did you go see Genesis?
I saw them several times there.
And were they? Is this kind of the whole theatric thing? I mean, the music, but I mean, as far as the presentation,
No, it was starting there. It was building. You knew he would come out with something each time the band performed. Gabriel,
right.
But the rest of the band just sort of were just regular sort of hippie types. The guitarist would play sitting down. And it was really Peter Gabriel
that
they performed it very well. Obviously, it was unusual music. I still find it strange.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Watcher of the Sky, man. That's like that song is like, this is a good song. Yeah, yeah.
There were some wonderful times at Friars. When punk happened, by then it moved to another venue in the town, and punk had such a bad reputation when it started that. There was a lot of discussion about whether
a liability kind of shit, who wants these kids spitting and breaking things.
Yeah, and the Friars had a sort of referendum, and they asked fans to respond and say, "Do you want to see these punk bands?"
Oh man!
And everyone said,
"So like,
said, yes, we do."
That's democracy.
So there was another phase, and in a new building. Just down the road from the first one. And then it was The Clash, Injury and the Blockheads. It was all that period of bands, madness.
All three of those were, man. Ian Dury, you got to see him at this club?
Yes, I did.
So this is smack dab and you're like, this is, that part of your life where you got, enough money to get in and enough energy to dig and you're like...
It was remarkable. You go for it would cost you 50p, which is it doesn't sound realistic now.
It sounds like a half a dollar.
Yeah, exactly. It costs you a dollar to go and see these acts, and there was a bar where you could get beer. You could get served at age 15 in this at certain places. They would serve us beer. We had no money to overdo it. So
right.
The gigs were often really well attended. people were they're trying to build community, I think. Dave Stops definitely learned from the Fillmore and right. Bill Graham, but there was no sort of apples or any of that nonsense, you know, but what there was an attempt at building sort of community.
Hey, I tell you, those apples, man, that tipped the scale.
So when you left a Friar's gig, you would get a printed out piece of paper, okay. And on one side there would be an image of, you know, drawn of the next gig at Friars, okay. And telling you who was coming. You turn it over, and there would be information on who the next band was. That, you know, you
aren't
could
those
see.
Still in existence at all? These
you know, you can find them on eBay now. I used to have them, and of course,
yeah, I mean,
they get thrown away.
I had all. I remember when I lost all my concert ticket stubs, you know, from like from 16 to 23 or something, and it was just like it was one of those. It was a spirit crusher, man. But you know, but it was like one of those things. It's like, are you really worried about this?
And it's interesting. I still remember. I guess I had scrapbooks for Bowie. And then later on for The Who. I became a massive Who fan after Bowie. I remember giving one set away to a friend, and I'm not sure what happened to him, and I still think about the damn thing.
Yeah, he's probably retired in some village above the town, you know, like they sold him. Yeah. All right, man. Steve, thanks so much for regaling us with stories of... Fantastic. Yeah, thank you. And then with that... I'm going to do this, and all I'm going to do is that.
Silver, as you get a little gold.
Yes, that's Steely Dan. I got the news, man, from the Asia record. I suppose I've been watching some YouTube about the making of Asia, and it's funny. I think back, and I think back when I'm watching this, and it's like, who really gives a damn about this? Yeah, but apparently I did, because I watched it, so, and there it is, Steely Dan. Hey, what is this? This is Radio Valencia. It's kind of a nice place. It's nice. Yeah, got the door open. It's dark now. The cars are going. It's lively out there. Let me tell you about what we listened to, because there was a chunk in there. We had the Hugh Masekela in there. I think we talked about that. Not that we have Moses Allison from the Wild Man on the Loose. We did Wild Man on the Loose. There were some Rolling Stones in there. I believe Mother's Little Helper we did. We did X from the Los Angeles record, Your Phone's Off the Hook. Flea Market Fine, man, Charles Parker, the Night and Day record. We had Phoebe Snow in there letting the good times roll. There's a segment we do here. It's called Riots in the Basement because, get that word, it's no lie, in the basement we're miles apart. No surprise, going to rise from the basement. And what it is, it's home recordists. Any style, any genre, it just has to be recorded where you live. It's home recording. And this person has sent me something a while back, and I couldn't get it go. Like today, it worked. So this is the Felix the Phoenix. So if you dig this, look for it on SoundCloud. This song's called Mystic Martyrs. And hold on, I got to turn in that device up. And I'm touching Mystic Martyrs, and it clicked. There we go. Thank you. Thank you.
We'll be right back. Still doing the same stuff. What a crazy turn. went to New York 3 times. I was only there for about 12 months. Yeah. I might go back sometime, but, you know, you spend a week in New York and it's like 5 minutes. Now that you're in Kansas.
use this as an opportunity to break in and say, hey, we got Claudia and the Loaf here.
They're,
Yeah.
Am I on here somewhere?
You are. Fantastic.
Yeah, I
know it's a far reach to get the headphones on, but don't worry. No.
Why did you see them there? They were in my blind spot.
They are camo.
They were in my blind spot. Oh, hey, there. You never told me what a beautiful voice I have.
I've told you so many times.
If Claudia could just take care of that raspy Alex Jones shit.
What's going on tonight?
We are going to take inventory at Paul's Boutique of the Beastie Boys album that has over 100 samples on it. Of music, period. Like 300 samples with movies and everything. But we're dissecting and taking inventory of the songs that went into, in my opinion, the best Beastie Boys album there is. Produced by the Dust Brothers. Originally going to be an instrumental by the Dust Brothers, but the Beastie Boys talked them into letting them put their words all over it, and I think the world's a better place. And it was really interesting because their next album was all like, we're playing the instruments. Like, after trying to clear hundreds of samples.
Right, what was the follow-up to that?
Check Your Head, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They were like, okay, let's start playing bass drums. Clearing samples is a full-time job back in those days.
Got into that record.
Those two back-to-back, I think, are like the definitive Beastie Boys albums. I love all their catalog, really, in some way or another, but like, they couldn't be too differently put together albums, you know. 100 samples versus like, a few samples and a whole lot of bass, drum, and keyboard, you know, like... We're going to get down with some Beastie Boys samples tonight.